Good evening, everyone, and welcome. This is Mount Prospect District 57 Board of Education business meeting for April 19th. Virginia, would you take the roll call, please?
Member Chung?
Here.
Member Compasto?
Here.
Vice President Kovas?
Here.
Member Kowalcha? Member May?
Here.
Member McCluskey? President Conahill?
Here. So the first order of business we have is to recognize a couple of our Lincoln wrestlers who wrestled in the state tournament. So if you gentlemen and your coaches want to come forward.
I think one of them stepped away for a second.
What?
I think one of them.
Oh, he just stepped out.
Yes.
He'll be back.
We can pause. Let's pause.
Yeah.
Because we're giving a couple board members some time to get here, too. So.
Okay. Do they want to have a good joke or something? I guess we'll wait.
That's right. I saw him walk out of the room, too.
Well, I can talk about the season, I guess. We had an incredibly successful, there he is. We had a really successful wrestling season this year. We won the conference tournament for the first time in school history. I checked, and so we're really pleased about that. And these two gentlemen here were very instrumental in our success, both this year and over the past 3 years. Two eighth graders here. We got Tommy Miller and Chandler Dorado. Tommy, I've got a chance to coach him for the last 3 years. He earned a trip to the state tournament all three of those years, which is an impressive feat. Something I appreciate about him is he's like a really nice guy. Like, he's just a very nice guy, but you put him on a mat and he's scary. And you might not know that about him, but I value that. Chandler, it's been a pleasure to coach him for the last 3 years too. I remember the first day he walked into my wrestling room, and I was like, wait, this is a sixth grader? Are you kidding me? This year, I kind of felt bad for him. We didn't have a whole lot of people to wrestle in our practice, so he often ended up wrestling me, which was sort of problematic at times, but had a very successful season, too. Made it to state, which I know was one of his goals, and I was really proud of him for putting in the hard work that it took to get there. So I'm proud of both of these guys, and I think they deserve a round of applause. I also like to thank, I wasn't able to make it, but my co-coach, John Rollinger, was helpful this year. Also like to thank Greg Miller for his help, especially at the state tournament. So thank you as well.
Okay. Well, congratulations, guys. Thanks for representing your school so well and working hard. And hopefully it was worthwhile for you. How did it feel to be downstate? Good?
Yeah.
All right. So. Then we have certificates for both of our coaches, so you can pass it on to your partner.
Thank you.
Congratulations. Thanks for all your work. Thanks, guys. How about another round of applause? Okay, we'll move on to communication. So first we have the NSSCO report. Dennis?
Thanks, Joe. I attended the meeting on Wednesday, April 4th at the NSSCO administration building. Very typical. Started out with the Shining Stars. A young man from District 214. Can't communicate verbally, but showed the way he communicates through interactive computer technology. It's assistive technology where he looks into the screen and words come out. He looks at certain words on the screen. It recognizes his pupils and talks for him. He was a very besides not being able to communicate, he was a very happy young man. It's one of the things that when you're at NSSEO, that you find that the students there, even though they have a very difficult time doing certain things and learning and communicating, you see how they work so hard. It really is something that when you're there, you really appreciate being there. There were various new directors appointed. One of the directors was stolen from District 57. Do we know about that, or
yeah,
am I saying something?
Gavin
is going to be the, let me find out his position here, over at NSSEO, the accounting coordinator. Oh, no, he's the accounting coordinator here. He's going to be the director of business services at NSSEO. There was a lengthy discussion regarding the budget, and we're going to see that later on in the agenda.
Okay, thank you. Next, we have Ed Foundation report.
So the Ed Foundation met last night, Wednesday, April 18th at Westbrook. So just a few things to share. So at that meeting, they discussed and voted on the grant applications that they received during the spring cycle. I can tell you that 34 applications were received with a total requested amount of a little over $42,000. So that's, if you compare it to the fall, they received 23 grant proposals with a total requested amount of $20,000. So they're really pleased that so many more teachers and staff and even some parents submitted applications. So please stay tuned for an announcement of which grants were funded. The Ed Foundation also has two dine and shares coming up next month, Portillo's May 14, Niles, and then Oberweis on the last day of school, so May 29th. Lastly, they're currently recruiting some new members for next year, and we had a couple new parents come to check it out last night. Many of this year's members are going to stay in their current positions, but Eric Brulette, who's the chair, confirmed that he will be stepping down. So right now they're looking particularly for a chair for next year. And their next meeting is Thursday, May 10th at 7:30 at Westbrook.
Okay, thank you. Do we have any PTO reports? Jerry, go ahead.
The Lions PTO met last week, and just a few things. They were talking about the upcoming Caponaries Ice Cream Night, May 9th. Planning for fifth grade activities is continuing with the fifth grade picnic coming up. Lastly, I guess the last notable thing, the fifth grade musical is coming up soon, on the 26th.
What is it? Do you know?
I don't remember what they said this year is.
I don't either. That's just great.
Okay. Vicki, did you have?
Yes. So Westbrook PTO met yesterday, Wednesday, April 18th at noon at Westbrook. Miss Carol and Clarence from Macaroni Soup, I don't know if you're familiar with them. They came to Westbrook yesterday and gave two performances. So she's a singer and a performer. She's very interactive with the kids. So at the meeting, the teachers really raved about her performance, and you know, everyone loved it, teachers, staff, kids. And afterwards, the PTO purchased a copy of all of her CDs. So I think she's got nine of them. So they purchased nine CDs to donate to the Westbrook Library, so that if teachers want to later come and, you know, check out and play a CD during class, they can. So that was very generous of their PTO. The other thing, special thing I want to mention is that on April 27, Lucy Meyer, who's a Special Olympics gold medalist in swimming, is going to be visiting Westbrook and speaking to a few of the afternoon classes, I think kindergarten classes. And so she is the national spokesperson of the Special Olympics UNICEF partnership, and her message is all about inclusion, about how everyone is different and unique, and I think in the past she's talked about the power of sports in her own life and in the lives of children with disabilities. So they're very excited. And their next meeting is Wednesday, May 16, 7 o'clock at Westbrook.
Did you say Miss Carol's performance is coming up? Or
it was.
It was.
Yes.
Did you see
Wednesday.
Her?
No, I didn't see her.
Oh. She's a friend of mine.
Oh.
I'm on a few of her CDs, too, though. So there's a little trivia. Little trivia for you. Okay, who else?
Okay. So I was at Lincoln's PTO meeting on Tuesday, April 17th. A couple things. First off, they are recruiting, or they're looking to recruit a PTO president. So if anyone's interested or knows any parties, I know they're going to get the word out, but they are looking to fill that role. The robotics team qualified for World Robotics Championship, which is in Detroit, and I think sometime next week. Track is in full swing. We have the play. So this weekend is the Guys in Dallas play, Friday and Saturday, if anyone's interested in attending. April 25th will be incoming parent night, so it gives a chance for Fairview Alliance Park parents that will have sixth graders going into Lincoln this upcoming fall to come to the school and hear all the great stuff about Lincoln. We also have Great America for the eighth graders on May 16th. The last day of eighth grade, they're going to have a picnic and a dance on May 22nd, and then obviously graduation is May 23rd. That's it for Lincoln.
Lots going on.
And then for Fairview, their spring assessments are underway. The teachers want to say thank you for the new microwave. It's an early staff appreciation gift. They have their staff appreciation is, as you're going to do later today, it's May 7th to the 11th. For their PTO end of year party, in lieu of that, they're doing a grant thing for teachers to put in grants, whether, you know, a little thing here or there, so that they'll put money towards something towards the school that they normally would pay out of pocket for. The Cub Scouts were there. The PTO is a charter holder, and they were talking about how now they're including girls in the program, and so starting next fall, girls are welcome to join the Cub Scout group. They, I guess, would have different dens, girls and boys, but it would be the same Cub Scout pack, which would be through Fairview. And then upcoming event, they're recruiting also for chairs for their fun fair and coolest school. They looks like they have all their board members set for next year. Upcoming events are their ice cream social fine arts night, which is May 2nd? Yeah, Wednesday, May 2nd. And then their field day is May 21st. Their coolest school for Capinaries is May 23rd. And I think that is it.
Okay, great. Thanks, everyone. So from my report, I just have a couple of, several dates that I want to make sure everyone knows of. First off, we don't have a need to meet on May 3rd, so we can cancel that meeting, which was tentative on the calendar. If you were signed up for the Lindheim's Law Review Seminar, they rescheduled it because of a snowstorm, so it's happening on Saturday, May 5th. I'm planning on going. Then the other thing you need to know is that graduation is, as Jen mentioned, is May 23rd. That'll be a prospect. And the staff appreciation, or not staff appreciation, the retirement breakfast at the end of the school year is Wednesday, May 30th, 1 week after the graduation. And then finally, our board self-evaluation is on the calendar for September 6th. Okay. All right. So right now is the first opportunity for community comments. We welcome and appreciate everybody who would like to share ideas or concerns with the board. And if you have questions, we may not be able to provide thorough and accurate answers at this time, so please submit your questions in writing at the table at the back of the room. Be sure to include your contact information so an administrator or myself can get back to you with a timely response. Would anyone like to address the board at this time? Okay. Then we will move on to our staff reports, starting with Dr. Allmiller.
Yes, The first part of my report is a FOIA report. Per requirements of Open Meetings Act and Freedom of Information Act, I have 5 FOIA requests to report. The first request was received on March 21 from Deborah Wilson. She requested records comparing District 57 tax rate alongside the tax rates of surrounding communities for each year from 2008 to today. We responded on March 23rd and sent her a copy of a slide showing this information prior to the March 20 election. We informed her that we did not have any records showing the information for prior years. The second request was received on March 31 from John Nowak. He requested 2016 board meeting minutes. We responded on April 4th and sent him the minutes requested. The third request was received on April 5 from Michelle Bikani Wiley of Sergeant Shriver National Center on Poverty Law. She requested how many school resource officers are employed in the district and the memorandum of understanding or any agreement that we have with the police department that provides us with a school resource officer. We responded on April 5 and informed her that we do not have any school resource officers. The fourth request was received on April 10 from Katie Kim of NBC5. She requested which schools in District 57 have a school resource officer, and if so, documents showing all policies and guidelines for the school resource officer. We responded on April 13th and informed her we do not have any school resource officers. The fifth request was received on April 13th from Lee Petrowski of Image Tech. He requested all documentation from the recent Canon contract that the district entered into, which would include any lease, sales, or service contracts associated with the contract and the term. We responded on April 18th and sent him a copy of the contract with Canon. The second part of my report is the strategic plan update. Included that in your packet with revisions printed in red. At this time, are there any questions about any of the revisions to the action plans, or is there any action plan you think has been omitted that needs to be added?
Does anyone have any?
A couple of items. The first thing under, I guess it's on the second page, under the sustain the relevance and rigor of student learning. I would like to see something about a feedback mechanism, developing a feedback mechanism with prospect. You know, we talk about the implementation of the math minutes, but I think we've talked as the board at some point about that feedback mechanism and how students are performing not only in math minutes but in other areas of the curriculum based on feedback from folks in the community.
So feedback from 214?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then just one other thing under the ensure fiscal solvency. Just from having, when we went through the referendum process, and I know we evaluated this, but we were turned down by other districts. But I was actually approached by people at, still further into the referendum about the evaluation of consolidation of districts. So I don't know if others agree, but I think we're gonna probably be faced with some sort of financial issues down the road. And basically we were turned down by other districts because of our financial stature at the time, but now post-referendum, should we be evaluating the need for that, prior to running into a financial issue down the road, so, in terms of our long-term financial planning.
Go ahead, yeah, let's.
I just to clarify, so was it other boards that opposed you, or other residents?
Other residents.
Oh,
yeah. I mean, I think it's something that's always at the, board's disposal, obviously, to approach other districts about that. Keep those lines of communication open with other districts. But as we know, it's not something that can be really initiated by one district. It takes a partnership of two districts wanting.
That's why I was thinking of it as a long-range plan item, that if the dialogue is there, you know, should we evaluate that so that it, you know, in a neutral time, basically we approached, we were turned down, and again, it was brought up to me, and I said, you know what, it's a fair point that, you know, we were turned down in a time of need.
Mm-hmm.
So, as some, you know, when I looked at the financial plan and our financial situation, you know, we know that our financials aren't going to last us forever. So, if we're looking at long-term financial planning, you know, I think it's probably the right thing to do to actually at least, while we have time, do the evaluation. If it comes out negative, or at least open the door in a neutral situation. So.
Mm-hmm.
But others may disagree. I just, I thought it was a fair point.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. I think maybe we should consider a feasibility study or working with the other districts to determine. Our analysis was a pretty basic, superficial analysis of consolidation. But to be honest with you, I don't think we have dug deep into the issue. So maybe at some point, get together with the other districts and see if some of the districts would like to contribute funding to conduct a feasibility study. I don't know. But I don't know if I'm qualified or various boards are qualified to provide a proper analysis.
Joe, a few months ago, we did approach some of the adjoining districts.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then they all... Anybody send us anything in writing, or I mean, I know they all said they weren't interested.
Yeah, the superintendent in Arlington Heights, District 25, actually prepared a fairly detailed overview for her board, you know, of what would be involved in, and I think I forwarded that to each of you, you know. So I think that if at some point, if this board, you know, wanted to dig deeper into that and what consolidation would look like and what would be necessary, the steps, you know, then that might be something to ask administration to do, you know.
I don't think it makes sense to spend money on a study or a report unless there is another adjoining district who has some interest, you know, through the board. I mean, I think we sent out the steps. The steps are fairly detailed on how these things get approved.
Yeah.
And I think it goes through, you know, the boards, then it goes through the voters.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So there's a lengthy process, and it has to be agreed to by all components. And I don't think it makes sense to spend the money for a study if the other district has no interest. So I think that the point being, we should maybe endeavor in the next 6 months to ask the same districts, the adjoining districts, if there's an interest, and then maybe periodically over the next few years, if that's annually, make the request or see if there's any interest in discussing the matter. And if there is, then there could be a discussion about reports or studies.
Well, being that we kind of just went through this with neighboring districts, I feel like that if we were to revisit that with them, that it would be appropriate for us to come back a second time with more information or a rationale for why we think this would be beneficial, you know. So I think that if the board wanted to move forward with that, the thing to do would be, you know, to ask our administration to prepare. And also, you know, information points for us as well, knowing that if we were, because we still have a, well, no, I take that back now. Now I think our tax rate kind of falls in the middle of neighboring districts, you know. So, you know, we'd have to look and see at, you know, what districts, where the tax rates fall, you know, and whether it now it would require them to raise their tax rate or whether it would still require us to raise our tax rate. And then the other big thing is the bargained contracts, you know, with the bargaining units and what that fiscal impact would be on our situation here. Because we still, you know, remain fairly close to the bottom in terms of, you know, teacher salaries and administrator salaries with neighboring districts, if not at the bottom. So I think that we also would have to know what's the fiscal impact of that, of consolidating with the neighboring districts, knowing that means our employee salaries are gonna get, you know, raised. So after we look at all that stuff, then we can make a decision whether we wanna go ahead and approach neighboring districts, you know.
I guess one of the points, Joe, though, a lot of the analysis can't be done until we actually understand fully the true impact of basically sharing with the other districts. So, I mean, my understanding from the approach before was that we were basically sent away because we couldn't get our financial house in order. And now we've taken the steps as a district to do that. So if we then approached and there's no interest, then, you know, it would probably save a lot of work if there's just not an interest on behalf of the other districts before we invest too much time and effort into it. But I just think it's probably the prudent thing to do, given that the rationale from other districts was, you know, basically we were approaching them to bail us out last time around.
Well, I don't think any of them ever characterized it that way. I think that they just looked at it as to whether they saw any benefit for their district.
Yeah.
57 actually wrote, they were written up in the paper actually basically saying, you know, so I don't know what their true rationale was, but I mean, we were approaching in a bad time from our perspective. And, you know, now if it's on more neutral ground and people say no, then I think it just takes, you know, takes it off the table for a period of time. But only if they said yes, you know, then maybe it's worth digging in deeper to do a more thorough analysis.
So I don't know if this is summarizing what you just said, Jerry, but so last time Joe, as our board president, kind of reached out to the other board presidents and approached it that way. So Jerry, tell me if I'm interpreting what you said. So would your suggestion be that maybe Joe did that again, just kind of informally approached the other board president, said, look, we're just sort of thinking about, does consolidation make sense sometime in the next 5-10 years for our two districts? And if they said no, you know, that's really not an interest of ours, then fine. But if one district said yes, you know, maybe not now, but yes, 5-10 years, you know, I'd be interested in pursuing this, then we would direct administration to
That's where I'm coming from.
Okay.
Yeah, no, that's fair.
Well, if the board favors that, I'd certainly be, you know, I would go ahead and take that action. I'm a little uncomfortable with it because I don't feel like I'm, you know, like I'm offering anything new to these districts, you know. I'm just going back and asking them the same question that I asked them several months ago. And, you know, I mean, sure, the referendum passed, but I still don't have anything to offer them in terms of, like, why it's more, you know, what's changed? Why is it more attractive to them now than it was 3 months ago? You know, even as a long-term proposal.
I think if we heard no now, then it's a rationale of, hey, we're not interested, regardless of the terms, financial or otherwise, which I think would be good to know. And I'm not saying we have to do it tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
This was all related to long-range planning, so I'm not saying that it's we have to call this week or do anything on this week, but in thinking about our long-run financial situation, it just seems like an appropriate thing to actually think about before we get into the situation that we were in the last time, which was, hey, we're out of money, we might not get a referendum passed, and guess what, you guys would be making up the difference as part of this. So that's where I'm coming from. That's more of a long way.
Yeah, I mean, yes and no, because even for consolidation to pass, voters still have to approve it,
right. No, that's
so, true. I mean, you if the referendum failed, then maybe actually there is, more of a case to be made for consolidating, because maybe the voters aren't in favor of, going forward status quo, but would consider an increase if we were consolidating. So it's, two sides of the coin there, but we can include it as something kind of long-term that we always have at our disposal, and at some point, whether it's in the next few months or in the next, couple of years, if we want to approach neighboring districts again, then we can do that. But I would say let's have, include it as a kind of a long-term thing on our radar, and then let's talk more about how and when is an appropriate time to approach districts. And maybe administration would have some input on that as well.
Other forms at which board presidents get together and discuss common issues, challenges, ideas. I mean, it's my sense that when we went to these other boards, I just don't know if they were in a position to get educated on the issue of consolidation, and we certainly weren't in a position to consolidate. That wasn't going to solve our issue. It would be interesting if the various boards decided, hey, let's long term get educated on this issue, and at some point we may conclude that this could be a good thing, or let's take these steps to study it collectively. Let's find out if other districts have consolidated and what were the results of the consolidation. Was it effective? Did it benefit everyone? Was it a failure? It'd be interesting if maybe we took that approach as a small step to at least coordinate with the other boards and say, hey, are you educated already on it, or do you want to collectively get educated on it? So in the future, maybe it becomes something that we'd all be more able to make an assessment, an educated assessment.
Well, there's, to answer your first question, there's no type of forums like that where board presidents get together. And it's consolidation, I don't even recall there being many sessions on it at the tri-conference in November. When we talked about this in the fall, I went back and looked, and there was very few instances of school consolidation in the state. And mostly it was elementary in small, rural districts where the elementary and the high school districts consolidated. That sort of thing. Maybe to share resources, share facilities, So, but with neighboring elementary districts, there just hasn't been too many instances of it. You know.
Well, you have to wonder also, besides the contract, I mean, it could also affect their Title I funds with us coming in if we have less and we throw their percentage off if they have more. I mean, certain things like that could happen too, where their funds go down for certain things.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it.
So they might not be.
There's, if you consolidate, there's going to be at least
right.
immediate short-term changes.
Right.
You know, it's going to affect both districts. But, and who knows, the long-term could advantage both districts, or the opposite could. Maybe it's just not feasible and it wouldn't benefit. Maybe districts aren't consolidating because districts have looked into it and concluded that it's not advantageous.
I think one district is always in a disadvantage.
Right.
You need both districts
right.
to agree, so one district is always going to say no. When you look at the picture, they're going to say it's not benefiting us.
Short term.
Yeah. But
not necessarily long term.
But they're not thinking of it long
term. I know.
You know what, I did some research and reading out in the fall, and I'll forward you some of the articles I read. But I do remember the takeaway for me was that the districts that had consolidated, they acknowledged that there really was nominal to no cost savings, mm-hmm. that wasn't the reason that they did it. You know, the reason they did it was you know, having to do with transportation issues, facilities, you know, things like that.
Right.
And because, again, you know, if you can eliminate a handful of administrators, usually, and you know, if we were to consolidate with one of our neighboring districts, you know, it wouldn't even be a handful. You know, maybe a couple of administrators you could eliminate. It's going to be more than offset by the increase in salaries with on teachers' contract mm-hmm. stuff. So, but maybe if you know, if this is something that you know we want to educate ourselves on, like over the summer or something like that, we could ask administration to you know prepare some materials for us to review, and then, like I said, I would share. Some of the things that I was able to find as well. So, I don't know. Are people interested in doing that at this time, or would you? How do you guys feel? You want to put it off, or is it something you want to dig into right away this summer? Anybody?
My only concern is spending the time, and I certainly don't want to spend any money on reports or evaluations until we have some interest from another district, because I think that's, I mean, you need two to tango, and
mm-hmm.
if you only have one, we're dancing around in circles, so, and I don't want to add a burden on administration to research all this, and we're not going to have anybody to agree with us, so.
Yeah, but at the same time, I don't feel comfortable approaching other districts again unless we know that it's something that, you know, we would want to do. You know, if we get involved with another district, says, okay, yeah, let's take a look at this, and then we dig into the nuts and bolts of it, and then we decide, oh, this is actually going to cost our taxpayers more, and then we back off from it when we were the ones that initiated it, you know. So I just feel like the second time around, like the first time around, I just kind of casted out there to see what kind of feedback I would get. But I think like the second time around, I should offer something of more substance, you know, saying these are the reasons we're interested in doing it, you know, because we think it would be advantageous in this way or could be mutually beneficial for this reason, you know.
I guess I would just also think we need to, I think we just need to be conscious that we just did pass the referendum, and there was a lot of support around District 57 specific, and there was a lot of conversation about the value of our homes in District 57 and why we needed the referendum to pass and the kind of caliber of our district. So I would just, you know, I think we just got to be careful of that, not to say that we can't have general conversations, but to engage other districts or potentially have it where now we're going to go to the same tax body and ask them to pay even more because we're going to do a consolidation, potentially. I'm just not a fan of it.
That's, maybe it's a little soon, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe it's something to wait on.
Yeah, that's what I say. You know, we're looking at long-range plan here.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Like I said, it's not, you know, it's in thinking about it from a long-range plan perspective. Maybe it's related to our budget cycle next, you know, something along that line, you know, either this year or next year, that we revisit it as, you know, maybe one of our assumptions is, hey, let's evaluate this in maybe a consolidation scenario and see what our numbers look like. So, you know, not something that we have to do, like I said, this week, 2 weeks, you know.
Okay. Keep it in as a arrow in our quiver, and if somebody at some point, if we want to dig deeper into it, it's always you know, folks can bring it up at any time,
right.
You know, it's always there. Okay.
So is it on the strategic plan?
I think to
just
it's kind of like full day kindergarten.
Got it. Got it. Okay. Was there anything else on the strategic plan?
Oh, anyone else have something? I had just one question. In terms of the curriculum review, in reference to the fine arts, see that we have conduct phase one evaluation research and phase three professional development. What is phase two and why is it not in there, or was it already done?
I will defer to Cassie.
So this year we met with I met with the music teachers earlier this year to review our curriculum maps, review fine arts standards, and look at our current programming and any gaps in programming. And typically, one of the things that we would look at in our cycle is we would do research, then we might look for any sort of curricular adoptions, professional development related to that adoption, and then continue to refine our process. And one of the things that in reviewing our programming with the music staff, there isn't necessarily anything new that we need to adopt. It really is, we made sure that our standards were aligned with, or that our curriculum maps are aligned with standards and that our practices in the classroom are. And then it's just continuing ongoing professional development related to that. There's not necessarily anything we would need to adopt or do differently in terms of new materials or programming. And so that's why we skipped over that step too, and I'm currently still working with the art teachers to do the same thing as well.
Okay, thanks.
Uh-huh.
Anyone else? All right.
Okay, moving on then, in your packet was a list of board meeting dates for next year. July 2018 through July 2019, and as Joe pointed out, September 6th is going to be the board self-evaluation meeting. You'll be asked to approve these, take action on them on the May 17th meeting. Also in your packet was a memo from Adam regarding the student fees. We simply put this in here just to validate what we were saying all along the referendum trail, that if the referendum passed, student fees would mirror what they were this year for next year. And we show you what's going to be posted on the website. And the last item is the NSSEO budget. If you have any questions, I will defer to Dennis.
Dennis, I'm sorry. Could I just move back to the FY19 student fees?
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I just have a comment and a question. So my comment is, I mean, exactly as you said, that if you look at this year's fees and next year's fees, this is exactly the same with the exception of some small increases in the lunch program, which we've said in a previous meeting was due to rising food costs. Yeah, so, I mean, I just think it's wonderful that we are looking at this version to approve versus the other backup version. My question is about the transportation fees. And I know it's much too early to have a discussion about our FY20 transportation fees, but I just want to mention it now instead of like throwing this on everyone in December. But so I know that the levy increase was $5.7 million, but the amount that we will receive is projected to be about $4 million possibly. I know it's hard to say. And then our transportation deficit is about $200,000. 5% of the $4 million is, taking care of the transportation deficit. But possibly, would it be, I just want to throw it out there for consideration that depending on the, you know, again, it's too early, but depending on the revenue received and all expenses that perhaps for FY20, maybe we could think about lowering our bus fees once our deficit is fulfilled, or even, you know, offering some sort of discount for parents with multiple kids taking the bus. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to see what you might think.
Okay.
Yeah. Actually, just one thing that maybe we should talk about it again, too, when we talk about the extension of the bus contract. Because I think that was a 6% increase for this coming year?
5.75 and then 3% in year 2.
After. So we're holding flat and we're actually, so our deficit will be greater as a result of that.
Okay. Any other discussion on fees?
Actually, I'm sorry.
Go ahead. Now's the time.
Well, I'm just thinking of some of our previous conversations, and I know we've had parents talk about before and after care, and I know we've done some like analysis on that. I know we've also tried to engage other, like the Park District and some mm-hmm. of their capabilities. I know they do something with District 59 right now. I also noticed for the first time that the Park District offered some additional services for specifically district or for upcoming year District 57 busing. So they're offering a program so that, you know, before school, and we will bus the kids to District 57. So it was like different. They've never done that before. So it's some type of they're trying to offer some type of before care program, which could potentially impact our the students that will be attending our program. But I don't know if we've ever really full-blown explored third-party services, or I mean, we just kind of looked at financial from that perspective. But I do think that maybe that's something that we should consider at some point, not immediate, but as we continue to look at fees and pain points that parents have stated, it's always been transportation, and it's always been, you know, either if they have younger kids, the before and after program. Those are two that have always just been a kind of reoccurring theme. Out of all the rest, we really don't get pushback on general curriculum or even the lunch program. It's mainly those two. So I just think it might be something to explore.
Joe, when is our contract? We have a contract with Park District. Is that renewed annually? Or?
We have an intergovernmental agreement with the Park District that we renew. I wouldn't say we don't necessarily renew it annually. It's just kind of been rolled over. However, just something to be, while we're talking about that, part of those agreements, like with the Lions Park Park District and using our facilities, part of that agreement goes back to when Lions Park was built and that land swap. So some of that renegotiations would be challenging if we're, talking about that at all. but as far as working with the park district and sharing services, part of the strategic plan that was added on this year is not only partnering with neighboring school districts, but with neighboring municipalities. So I know a handful of us talk with the park district often and the village often, and part of those conversations revolve around kind of more of those shared services. So kind of some of the things that Jen was speaking about.
Has that ever been discussed, the after school?
We haven't discussed that part yet, but definitely we can and we will.
You can bring it up.
Mm-hmm.
There's probably a way we can coordinate it and absorb some of the costs. They can absorb some of the costs.
Mm-hmm.
And the parent may be able to absorb some of the costs, and then it could work out.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be cost effective.
Yeah. Definitely can explore. The only challenge, of course, is making sure that when we're looking at the park district, we're singling out those kids that are only District 57 students, which has always been a challenge in the past.
That's not going to work.
All right. Any other? All right. Thanks. So the last item then?
The NSSEO budget.
So I think everybody received a copy in the notes for the meeting today.
Yeah.
I think the important part is the first part. The copy I have has nice little tabs on it. but if you look at page 2, it talks about the costs per student to the district, and it actually all programs, it's decreasing. The decrease is between 0.35%, and the highest is 20%, 20.15%, and that's for the deaf and hard of hearing for high school. So that wouldn't really impact us, but the elementary and the middle school deaf and hard of hearing does, and 7.27% for the middle school. The staff is actually, overall staff is going down by about 7 FTE. The overall budget expenditures is, I believe, 3% overall going up. And that's about average. And it's, I think, the majority, 80 to 90% of that is based on salaries and benefits for the employees. The NSSEO, typically it's policy that 25% of the students could be non-member students, but they're up to about 30%, and that's an average in all the programs, and it can be evaluated by the board on a as-is basis, and the policy is that as long as it's not impacting the member district students, it's not a problem, and it actually is a benefit because the non-member pay substantially more, in some cases 25% more in tuition. So right now they're about 30%. And then if you look at the end of the budget, it talks about our district, and that's what we're concerned about. And we're staying about stable. I think initially we were projected last year for 3 students in the program. This year 3 students, and actually I think we went to about 3.5 on the actual. And then if you look at the final line on, I believe it's the second to last page, it shows we're anticipated going down about $5,400, and that's about 1.8%. So in regards to the programs, again, overall, I think they do a very good job. In regards to how the impact is on our district, it's really for administration. But I think if you see what they do with the kids that are in the programs, it's just amazing. So, and it's difficult to deal with kids with challenging situations. So it's my opinion that we should agree with the budget.
Any questions? Okay. Dennis, I think there's consensus here to go ahead and vote in favor of this budget.
Do we have to vote to approve it?
I don't think we do, no. We just need to...
Well, yeah, but then
or
at the May 17th meeting.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, on that 17th. Okay. Oh, okay. When does Dennis vote?
Not until June.
Oh, okay. Got it. All right. Then we'll move on to the consent agenda. There's a number of things on here. We'll need to pull the board minutes. We had different combinations of people. And actually, the March 15th meeting, Jerry was present for the closed session, but not the open session. So, but then there's the other items, personnel transactions, financial reports, and accounts payable bills. Jen, you reviewed those?
Yes, all looked great.
All right. The preliminary staffing plan, actually, I'd like to pull the staffing plan. Approved salary increases for the support staff not included in the MPE-SPA bargaining unit. If everyone saw that in the board packet, that those increases are 2.5%. And then the final item is adopting a resolution proclaiming Teacher Appreciation Week for the week of May 7th. So, is there anything else that anyone would like to have pulled?
I do have one clarifying question on item 6.
Do you want to just ask that question, Jerry?
The number that was split out for the, instead of having it as a percentage, it was the $10,000.
Mm-hmm.
Does that in fact equate to the same percentage increase? Okay, that's what I wasn't completely clear from the correspondence.
Yes.
Okay. Because I noticed one person was, the person who left was out, and but yeah, I think the $10,000, if you took it divided by the salaries, was
that the same percentage. That $10,000 is the 2.5% based on each person's salary.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, that was it.
Okay. So, if we want, we could have a motion for the remaining items 2, 3, 4, 6, and 7.
Motion to approve 2 personal transactions, accept retirement of 1 certified employee, approve employment of 2 ESP individuals. Accept resignations of 3 ESP employees. Number 3, financial reports for March 2018. 4, accounts payables. 6, approved salary increase for fiscal year 19 for educational support staff excluded from MPESPA bargaining unit. And 7, adopt resolution 180419 proclaiming Teacher Appreciation Week, May 7th through the 11th, 2018.
Second.
Jen.
Yes.
Vice President Kovas?
Yes.
Member Kowalczyk?
Yes.
Member May?
Yes.
Member McCluskey?
Yes.
President Sonnenfeld?
Yes. Then, we'll have to separate out the March 15th open and closed sessions. Can I get a motion on the open session?
Motion to approve minutes from the March 15th.
No.
No.
Let's just do.
minutes from the March 15th open session.
Second.
Member Compasso?
Yes.
Vice President Kovas?
Yes.
Member Kowalczyk?
Yes.
Member May?
Yes.
Member McCluskey?
Abstain.
Member Chung?
Yes.
President Sonnenfeld?
Yes.
Did you abstain on that?
No, because I'm the next one. I'm not that one. I said that I was there on that one. I wasn't there on the fifth. Right? I was there on that one. I wasn't there on the fifth.
She wasn't.
She wasn't on the 15th.
She wasn't on the 15th, so you need to abstain.
Yeah.
Are you abstaining?
I wasn't on the 5th.
Both of those you were missing. March 15th.
I don't remember traveling on the 15th.
Well, I think it's the minutes reflect it.
Okay.
Someone want to take a look, double check and make sure.
Yeah, I thought I was here, but
The minutes reflect she was not there on the phone.
Okay.
Right.
You want to try that again for the third time?
All right.
So these are both open, right?
So
no, just the one open.
This is just the March 15th open session. According to the minutes, Jen and Jerry were both absent. Well, yeah, right. Mm-hmm.
For the 5th or the?
For the 15th.
The 15th.
March 15th.
She was not here, and the 5th.
And she wasn't at April 5th either.
Right, but we're going to get to that in a second.
Okay.
Close, okay.
So this is the meeting that Jen and Jerry were both missing. This is the open meeting on March 15th.
Okay.
Motion to approve minutes. Open session on March 15th.
Second. Vice President Kovas?
Abstain.
Member Quattro?
Yes.
Member May?
Yes.
Member McCluskey?
Abstain.
Member Chung?
Yes.
Member Compastro?
Yes.
Yes. Now the remaining meetings, closed session on March 15th, and both open and closed session on April 5th, everyone was present except for Jen.
Okay.
So we can have one motion for those meetings.
Motion to approve the regular business meeting on March 15th, closed session, and the business meeting April 5th. Open and closed sessions.
Second.
Eileen.
Member Kowalczyk?
Yes.
Member May?
Yes.
Member McCluskey?
Yes.
Member Chung?
Yes.
Member Compastro?
Yes.
Vice President Kovas?
Abstain.
President Sanipal?
Yes. All right. Thanks, everyone. I don't think I've ever had that happen, not in my time on the board.
That's the first.
So I wanted to ask Elaine to kind of clarify the change in staffing plan here. If you could talk about these different positions, like, there's a first grade position that's going away. Is that because of enrollment?
Yes.
I assume we're not going to have a huge first grade again. And then could you talk about how what's being added at Lincoln and what are the other positions that are being shuffled?
Well, the reduction in the LRC director, art teacher, and music teacher of a 0.1 at Westbrook is because of the decrease of the first grade section. So that's the same reason. I have proposed increasing our psychologists by one for across the district. We have just found that having a 0.5 at Westbrook and at Lincoln is not sufficient for the number of evaluations that you have because of the size of their enrollment and the age of the children. And then the instructional assistant, 0.2 assistant at Lincoln, that was as a result of we had a math teacher this year because of an added section of 0.2. She was also a 0.8 instructional assistant. So we don't need her for the math position next year. We just decided to keep her as full time, but there'll be a reduction in salary because it's going from certified to ESP.
Could you talk about why do we not need that math teacher? Is the enrollment going down at Lincoln?
It's a matter of sections, yeah.
It's the number of sections? Okay.
Did she only teach one class?
Just one class.
Yeah, I remember that, yeah.
And I think that summarizes it.
And then the instructional assistant in the LRC and the floater. The last.
Yes. That position, because of Michelle Walsh's instruction of reading intervention. She's not able to keep the LRC open all periods if she were to maintain her planning periods. So we're in violation of the contract for her not having planning periods. So we need some supervision in there, otherwise the library has to close down. And we can do that with an instructional assistant. She would only be needed for half the day, but it's not grouped all for morning or all for afternoon, so it's scattered throughout the day. So we will keep that position as a floater instructional assistant, which will come in very handy because we never have subs for instructional assistants. So that will help out in that capacity.
So how long have we been in violation of the CBA?
She's been doing it all year.
So it's just been this year?
Yeah.
And what happened in previous years?
The reading instruction intervention was handled by other teachers.
Oh, so she just started doing
reading intervention. Yeah.
And why was it? I'm trying to understand what's changed. Why is it necessary for her to do reading intervention this year when it never was previously?
Because we had teachers doing the reading intervention, those positions changed this year. We no longer have that reading specialist position at Lincoln.
Oh, we had a designated reading specialist we did before?
Yeah, like a 0.5.
Okay. Okay, thank you. Anyone else have questions about it?
I just have it's a general question. When you decrease like an art teacher or music teacher by 0.1, what does that actually mean?
They go from 3 days to 2.5.
Okay.
So basically, the bottom line here is that, and again, this is preliminary staffing plan. We're going to see another staffing plan. When does that happen? In August?
August.
And the difference between this plan and the plan that we've been working with this year is 0.7, right? An increase of 0.7?
That's correct.
Okay. All right. Someone like to make a motion?
A motion to approve year 19 preliminary staffing plan.
Second.
Member May?
Yes.
Member McCluskey?
Yes.
Member Chung?
Yes.
Member Compasso?
Yes.
Vice President Kovach?
Yes.
Member Kwacha?
Yes.
President Sonnenfeld?
Yes. So, for unfinished business, we have a second read of a single board policy that we tabled at the last meeting. This has to do with administering medicines to students. Someone like to make a motion on that?
I have one question on it, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Before we, I think there actually is a little inconsistency in one part. On the second page, it actually reads, upon administration of an unassigned epinephrine auto-injector or an opioid antagonist. In the section under the school district supply of undesignated, there's only undesignated epinephrine auto-injectors. Do we need to actually have a section about having undesignated opioid antagonists if we're going to bring it up in the later paragraph?
Not according to press.
Okay.
This is press's policy.
Okay. It just didn't read right that we would actually have, that we don't have a policy to have the inventory, but we have the policy to administer. So I didn't know if that was something that our attorneys had written after our.
It's from press okay. Attorneys.
I think it may deal with the fact that I think that in Illinois they changed the law to reflect that you don't need a prescription for it anymore. It's hard to get it, but you can go to a pharmacy and get it because
such a problem that they're allowing people to administer to, yeah, and regular, if you can, regular individuals can mm-hmm. actually purchase the drugs. So I think they're allowing for administration, even if you're not professionally trained on it.
Okay.
Although we want to make sure that whoever's administering the school is.
All right. Someone like to make a motion?
Motion to approve Board Policy 7:270, administering medicines to students.
Second. Member
McCluskey? Yes.
Member Chung?
Yes.
Member Capasto?
Yes.
Vice President Clovis?
Yes.
Member Quacha?
Yes.
Member May?
Yes.
President Sonnenfeld?
Yes. And then we'll move on to new business. The first item is to adopt the resolution for our IMRF authorized agent. This has to do with the fact that Joan Torres, our current authorized agent, is leaving the district. Do you want to just talk about this?
I'll defer to
or,
that.
Yeah.
Per Illinois school code, each school district must have an IMRF authorized agent. Joan has been our authorized agent, and she is leaving as of April 30th. Several years ago, when I was in my previous district, I went through the training, so I'm qualified to be the authorized agent. So this resolution would name me as the authorized agent, and then as the new payroll person is hired, that individual will go through the training at some point, and then that individual will become the authorized agent. So this is a typical formal resolution, board resolution, to adopt or to approve me as the authorized agent. Typical standard procedure.
Okay. Anyone have any questions? And then in your board packet, the resolution number is actually there. So maybe if somebody, does anyone have that in front of them? Mm-hmm. They can make a motion.
Motion to approve resolution number 180419A for the appointment of an authorized agent to represent Mount Prospect School District 57 in the Illinois Municipal Retirement Fund.
Yes. I'm going to backtrack here because I missed at the bottom of the first page. There is another opportunity for community comments. So at this point, I'd like to open up the floor to anyone who would like to address the board. Okay. Sorry to skip over that. And we'll go on to new business item two. This is to approve the transportation contract extension with First Student. Mr. Parisi, do you want to?
So shortly after the referendum was successful, we contacted First Student and sat down and started having those discussions about the possibility of a two-year extension. If the board remembers, we're going back, several years ago, there was a three-year contract which was awarded to Grand Prairie. After the three-year contract, the board entered into a two-year extension with Grand Prairie. Statute allows that, and then after the two-year extension is when a school district goes out and has to bid again. So at that time, First Student won the bid. First Student, this is the end of their three-year contract, and now we have the ability to enter into a two-year extension. I've been talking with many of my colleagues at neighboring school districts,
And there have been some outrageous contract extension rates, anywhere from 20% to 23% to 30% to 77%. So knowing that when we met with First Student, we said that there was no way our board would ever support any increase anywhere close to that. So they need to come back with a contract extension that was a reasonable extension. They came back with 5.75 for year one and 3% year two, which, considering our conversations with the neighboring school districts, I felt like that was a fair price. Therefore, I'm recommending extending the contract for 2 years with First Student based on those numbers.
Jen.
First off, Adam, great negotiations.
Good job. Thank you.
But second, I was just curious more. I know a couple years ago when we decided to award this to First Student, there was a lot of, it was a hard decision with that existing board because of kind of the partnership we had with the previous company. I've only heard positive remarks regarding First Student. My kids have taken the bus. We don't have any issue. But from other community members as well. What has been your opinion just of their performance in general and how, you know, from an operational standpoint?
Overall, they do a decent job. It's a very challenging environment. They're always trying to find new bus drivers. They're always trying to find somebody who's going to route the routes. The business office in our district does an excellent job. We really take a hands-on approach with the routing and the printing of passes and using bus bulletin, try to encourage parents to sign up for those to get notifications. We're on the phone constantly communicating with them. So because of that model that was established well before I got here, the relationship works well. Good. There's always going to be hiccups with any transportation company, but overall, I'd say the level of services is good. I do not know off the top of my head.
And when was that original contract signed?
This is the third year, so.
Okay, so 2015.
15-16 would have been year one.
Okay, I was just trying to get a gauge on, because their largest piece would probably be fuel prices, so we're basically around parity with where fuel prices were back then. They kind of got a windfall with the drop in fuel prices during the contract period. Okay.
And they've been increasing the wages of their drivers in an attempt to lure them in. As the economy has recovered, you know, 4 or 5 years ago it was quite easier to get individuals who were seeking work to drive a bus. Now, not so much. So they've been, I don't know if you probably see as you're driving around the community, signs advertising for, you know, for bus drivers. First Student does a lot of advertising trying to attract new employees.
Are there still the same amount of bus companies out there? Has any bus companies bought up?
Unfortunately, in our area, there's essentially two companies. It's Grand Prairie and First Student, which creates many challenges, as you can imagine.
Right.
Especially when there is a bid. Many times you'll have those two companies show up. And also there are many situations, I went through this in my last district, where only one of the companies will actually bid. So
prior to the referendum, was there any thought about putting it out to bid so that Grand Prairie and First Student could both, you know, bid for our services? Or were you, because I was
Because everything was going well and knowing, I always feel that, you know, in a negotiation, I have more of a better chance of getting a better rate than a bid. When you go through a formal bid process, you don't always get the best price, especially in a situation like we are in our area, knowing that we have two companies. This isn't the day where we have, you know, five, six, seven companies. They're all fighting for business. Grand Prairie and First Student aren't really fighting for business. It's one of the two. So hopefully in 2 years from now, there'll be a competitive environment. But at this point, signing a 2-year extension at these increases is, you know, in my opinion, the best way to move forward.
At the end of the 2 years, would we have an option to extend it 1 year, or do we have to, are we required to go out to bid?
There are ways that you can extend it a year, but it's challenging sometimes. And usually, you know, if it's challenging, and as we get closer to that, we can start having those conversations. I would have the conversations with the attorney prior to that, make sure we're going through everything. I know it's been done in certain circumstances, but I would definitely consult the attorney before recommending going that route.
I'm sorry, I have one more question. Can you refresh my memory on that activity bus? I know some of it. I think last year we ended up, maybe it wasn't the activity bus, but I know
we moved from 2 activity buses to 1 activity bus.
Okay.
This is our second year running that. So it's 1 bus that runs and just does a kind of longer creative route throughout the north and south side of the district, where we previously had 2 buses, 1 in the north and 1 in the south side.
Okay, and we did that because didn't we want to utilize that bus for Westbrook?
Yes.
So that we wouldn't have kids being dropped off so late in the
Correct.
Day. Okay, and so do we still, as we talk about the transportation fees and as we start to move forward, do we feel like the activity bus is working? We don't need anything additional? Is there any, because I know initially for us to put it back, I thought we had some restrictions around it, or maybe not.
Quite frankly, over the last 2 years, I haven't heard negativity from parents or staff members regarding the bus. So, to my knowledge, things have worked out well. The thing with the activity bus, it's, you know, it changes based on the time of year, the weather, you know, who's playing sports, plays, depending on the involvement. There could be 10 people on the bus. There could be 50 people on the bus. So it's difficult to gauge the ridership of the activity bus.
Any other questions? Okay. Thank you. So I'll entertain a motion on the transportation contract.
Motion to approve transportation contract extension with First Student.
Second. Member Compasso?
Yes.
Yes.
Member Quatcha?
Yes.
Member May?
Yes.
Member McCluskey?
Yes.
Member Chung?
Yes.
President Sonnenfeld?
Yes. There are no board discussion items. We do have need to convene into closed session. This is for the purpose of discussing the appointment, employment, compensation, discipline, performance, or dismissal of specific employees of the public body. Board action will not take place following closed session. Can I have a motion?
Motion to go into closed session.
Second. Vice President Kobus?
Yes.
Member Kowalczyk?
Yes.
Member May?
Yes.
Member McCluskey?
Yes.
Member Chung?
Yes.
Member Compasso?
Yes.
President Sonnenfeld?
Yes. Thank you, everyone. Have a nice evening.